Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Get big savings on big equipment for one big day at United Rentals on South Frontage Road in Columbus, Thursday, October 2nd from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m.
Hey, this is Tiffany Blackston. Call me today for the equipment you're looking for. 662-889-2528. Can't wait to see you on October 2nd.
And Falca are here with me today.
Nice.
So we're excited to be part of German Language Day. Here's why. In horticulture, there comes a point, if you study a while, you have to eventually start picking your way through some of the German, because that's where a lot of the source material is for the research that's important to classic horticulture. And hearing us little Southerners chew it up is really hilarious. We're not very good.
Yeah,
at
I'm not very good at it. Now, Mary, she has the German.
Well, sure. Mary learned some for her whole life. Right. Mary speaks it. You know, she's got something going on. Of course, my son-in-law, our team captain here in the remote studio, Daniel, is there too. His mother's German. She's there right as we speak. And it's a wonderful language. It says a whole lot, and that's a lot of the reason why so much science has been maintained in that language. There's nuance to it that other things don't have. So that's what we have to say today about German. And we'll probably throw in a couple of phrases along the way. All you gardeners, that sort of thing. You know, coming up next week is this really fun Magnolia Garden Festival. I hope y'all are going to all come to Ridgeland and just overwhelm the place with happy gardeners, because these are some of the best speakers you're going to see in one place, all right? Trust me, you want to know more about it. There's lots of information all over the social medias. Certainly, you know, you can get in touch with me and I'll send you a flyer if you haven't already got one. But for those of you who are ordering coffee for the delivery that day, I will be there and the coffee will be there. So go ahead and put in your orders. But you don't have to pay shipping, because I will be your shipping. So when you order the coffee, send us an email or order through the ad that you've already seen, the promotion that we just were so happy to see putting us through a PayPal link. You can also do Venmo, all that sort of stuff. But the coffee is bouncing, and we're having a real good time with it. So thank you all very, very much, and I look forward to some more smiling faces.
You're not bringing, you know, like pounds of shrimp for folks and all that, no. Too. It's just no. A coffee.
This is coffee day. This is coffee day. But I can take an order for this or that. There often are things. I used to have a friend that's the best thing in the world was a loaf of French bread or a half of a muffaletta, you know, something that was very New Orleans. And although I'm not, I would have to go a bit to get to the game, to the muffaletta, I can probably come up with the French bread.
Leidenheimer.
Yes.
One of the most famous brands, and it is amazing. Stuff's like, it's like a cloud, but it's also bread. And
it's also baked, yeah.
And it holds together so well. I mean, it's this mix of perfection that
people
they have figured out.
People for years have wondered why particular bread is better in some places than it is in others. The New York bagels, for example, you know, those, the kinds of things, the pita that you get in the Middle East is apparently better than any I've ever eaten, because I haven't been there. But I do think that there's a lot to be said for the person making it, but there's also a lot to be said for the oven or the water or the flour or the, you know, whatever else is going on in it. So that's kind of fun.
One of our favorite places I did get to, it was a couple weeks ago, went down to Just Vanilla, and Guillermo was there, and I got to visit with him. And man, an amazing guy. I mean,
isn't he amazing?
Yeah.
Our favorite baker. Yes. If y'all don't have a favorite baker, you need to find one or come see Guillermo, because everybody needs
give
a favorite
Guillermo
baker.
A shot. Yeah, he's amazing. And what a great guy, too. Just visiting with him about, you know, the shirts and some of the swag and things and the socks. And, on top of the best bakery I can even comment upon.
Exactly.
And it's amazing. So, but you know, what a great place. And it's like an art show when you go in there too.
Yeah, it is.
If you need a little inspiration,
their work is one of those places where they could be anywhere they want to be.
Yeah.
And the fact that they're in Dueling Hall in Jackson just makes us all so happy.
And I wanted to mention that, because I'd never really gotten to visit with him before, and what a really smart and genuine article, and loves the work he does too.
Yes. Yeah, really. Yes. Cool. You have to do all that, compete and do all those things that he's done. You have to really love your stuff, and he does, I'm happy to say. It's an important part of our community.
Well, and as you were saying about, you know,
goes with the coffee.
Goes with coffee, yeah. I mean, just having that conversation yesterday, is like, what goes with what best? Like, corn chips, if you have the barbecue, not barbecue, but the chili cheese Frito corn chips, that goes best with a good, you know, just regular American lager. You know, beignets, they go best with a chicory coffee. I mean, you know,
that
it's
could
the pairings,
be. That could
you know.
Be. It all goes better with the Garden Mama blend.
Yeah,
then,
right, did you? But now we're going to go with Garden Mama's blend.
That's
and
right.
If whatever bread you want. And get a croissant out there, too, now. Come on,
you know, one of the things that's fun about getting to see people at an event like the one coming up next Saturday is the stories that they tell and the things that they listen to. And sometimes, I have to say that one of the things that I get more comments about than anything else is this notion that I have come up with that we should be reading the text just at random. And I do think we're going to have to do that, Lance, because I believe it would be a hilarious. I mean, no attributions, no comments, just the things people write are just so marvelous and so wonderful. How can you do that? Isn't that making fun of people? No, it's not. It's appreciating that you took the time to write a text and send it to us.
Man, we go
Come
through
on.
So many
We're
texts.
So lucky.
Yes,
you know how many places there are sitting waiting for somebody to send a text to their radio program? Come on.
That's a great point. We have such great interaction. Last night, same way. In every show we
well,
have.
Well, I can see that. Yeah, I can see that all in your football show, rather, from last night. Looks like everybody was busy.
Well, it was a big night. And that's the way it is, though. You want your listeners to engage. And
sure.
Anytime we can highlight them or
Yeah, I mean, we're fun to talk,
out,
but
right.
If you're not there, we're not nearly as much fun, and we certainly wouldn't get paid to be here. So thank you very much for listening
exactly.
All the time. Beautiful pumpkin shots coming up at supertalk.tv. Oh, something else somebody wrote to me this week, and I was so happy to hear. I listen to your show on the radio, and then when you talk about the pictures, I can't see them.
Uh-oh.
So I go to the YouTube the next day and look at the pictures and get to hear it all over again. I thought that was so sweet.
Even better, right?
So wonderful.
Double the Garden Mama.
Exactly. Just delightful.
Well, the YouTube setup's nice, too, because, you know, you get a different...
Setup.
I get to glue it together after we get done and to pull out the middle pieces and glue it together. And
he
then
takes out all the places where I curse.
No, of course. Yeah. Get all that out there. You're so notorious.
I'm so notorious.
Mouth like a sailor on you, girl.
Well, you know, the sailors that I've known were pretty better than me. Let's see. Lawrence from Corinth. Hello, Corinth. Oh, my goodness. This is an interesting problem and one that I do hear about at this time of the year because the growth on crepe myrtles can be so fast, and this is going at a good clip. We have a light pink crepe myrtle over 70 years old that the power company cut off at about 5 feet. Yes, in parentheses, crepe murder.
Yeah.
Yes. To keep it from having all those knots where new sprouts grow, should we cut it down to the ground and let a few sprouts come up from the ground?
They will.
You can, and then you can choose them. But I think since you've got 5 feet, I would let that be the base of where the choices begin. In other words, you would like it to have probably three strong trunks. So I would let three of them emerge and keep going and just keep cutting off all the rest of it until it submits to you and puts its energy into those.
Yeah, 5 feet.
Because that's a nice
bad.
Place to start.
Yeah,
it's really not bad.
Most of mine is about head high.
But
what
a terrible problem to have, though.
Well, and you know, cut it off.
I hope
at
you weren't
feet.
Home when they did it because that would have been really sad to watch. But
hey,
I know sometimes they have to. But.
Supposedly getting the tallow tree cut out of the yard today, so this is celebratory.
Can we say hallelujah?
Yes. So if any of you have a tallow tree that has been giving you trouble, I know how you feel. And now I'm going to be able to grow grass again. I'm so excited.
They're invasive. In fact, this is you play right into my hands. Thank you for doing that.
You
didn't
welcome.
Know, but the University of Konstanz is letting us know why some plants are taking over the world. And this is one of the examples that they cite, in fact. The naturalizations that have taken place since the 1950s, 60s, when really a lot of imports were becoming a bigger part of our botanical world here. That's why they ended up having to name them. They used to be called naturalized alien plants, which nobody liked, and crepe myrtle certainly is nicer than that term, but they're neophytes, which is another
Newbies.
Word which is another word that doesn't actually mean everything. It's has a bunch of different connotations to it, but the invasive plants spread rapidly because they have nothing to eat them and because they're in an environment that they haven't been in before, and it goes great. Some don't. Some things, you know, you try to do that to them and they never take off. But that's why when, for example, the testing that they put plants through is so tremendous. The knockout rose only was selected after several years, I mean many years of field tests where they were basically tortured, and the ones that could make it were the ones that became knockouts. They were not watered, not fertilized, not pruned, run over, left in terrible soil, and they still managed to grow and bloom. So with cultivation after that, they became knockouts. So that's how we do those things. But this international group there found that they compared the spread of almost 4,000 native plant species in 10 different European countries. Yes, we can translate this to us because it, you know, let's face it, goldenrod is one of the most popular potted plants in the UK. Okay? What they're telling us is that the reason that happens, the reason they can go do so well and survive so well, is because the European plants that successfully naturalize in foreign ecosystems have also rapidly expanded in their European homes. Same thing is true here. You really can't go anywhere without seeing goldenrod across the South and many parts of the West. So those are the plants that in turn jump in and run when they get to their new location. Tallow tree did that. It was popular. It was one that was beautiful. People saw it, saw that beautiful fall color, saw those cute little popcorns, said, oh, everybody's going to love this. Well, they did, and they loved it a little too much because it's extremely invasive in so many parts of the lower United States. So thank you very much for getting rid of yours. I appreciate it, Lance.
It's been
and yeah, you will have better sunlight for your lawn. That'll help. That will help too.
It's not even just the sunlight for the lawn. It's the garbage and popcorn and tallow and leaves.
Yeah.
It's a constant. I mean, it's like 28 times a year. It almost is like on the breeding schedule of a rabbit, I think, or a stray cat. It's just so much. You look down and you're like, oh, it's these things are dropping again, you know. And so any growth of grass,
it doesn't all happen at once.
It takes all. It basically gives you a whole new soil of tallow.
Yeah,
because that's how it much does. It drops. So yeah, it's going to be a wonderful treat. Those little black balls that are everywhere that I've worked so hard over the years. Those things.
Well, and
multiply.
As I heard someone say, but I just loved, you know, the fall color. And the person said to them, I mean, this is a more educated horticulture person than me, said, paint the fence. You know,
yeah,
you want that fall color, paint the fence. Just don't put that tree out there, because for those of you who are just tuning in and going, what are they talking about? There are a lot of plants, when they are brought somewhere else and they take over, they dominate. They not only shade out the native plants beneath them, which are the traditional food for that ecosystem, for the wildlife in that area, but they can also do things like choke streams, which is what the tallow trees have done in South Mississippi and across to Florida, too. They're too prolific for the environment. They grow better than we thought, better than anyone thought. And it's turned out to be a difficult problem. Lawrence has another question about crepe myrtles. Another crepe myrtle that he has a black coating on the leaves, and it does flake off when they're bent. He sprayed it with Fertilome Triple Action Plus. Well, what you've got is an insect infestation, and what's happening is that as the insects feed in the top of the tree, what they cannot digest, they excrete in the form of essentially honeydew, is what we call it because we're all so euphemistic. But it's basically the problem is it's a sugary substance that then the sooty mold is going to grow in. That's the black stuff that you see that will rub off, okay? So if this is an important tree to you and it's a big tree and the triple action didn't make a dent in the bug part, I would probably suggest either a systemic now or next spring. Be sure that you rake up all those leaves that do fall so that you're not overwintering too many insects. Some of them are going to overwinter. They always do. But it is a good reason to understand that this is not crepe myrtle bark scale. If you told me that the bark on the tree was black, that's a different problem. But the leaves being black, it's just a sooty mold problem that's the result of probably aphids feeding up in the top of the tree. So you can use a systemic if it's a big tree, if you can't spray it all. Or you can spray it. I don't feel like triple action is necessary. I would probably go with either a pyrethrin or a spinosad, but do it every 8 days for 3 sprays, because that's what breaks up that life cycle of the insect. That's another reason why people will say that a systemic is a better product to use in this case, because you only have to apply it once. So,
quick question for you on that. Yes. I was sitting out yesterday in the courtyard of the office, and there's several crepe myrtles out there, and usually during the year, one of them will have that sappiness, and then the white little insects flying around a little.
Our friends, the white flies.
The white flies. I noticed they were out yesterday. Is this like something that if you see them floating around, you.
Autumn is. They like
time.
It.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask you. Was there,
they've been
this
busy
is when you
multiplying all summer. Okay. Yeah. Now they're just, feeding they're again. Okay. Yeah.
Well, I noticed they were. I was like, what is that? Oh, goodness, they're not those things.
Well, and sometimes they'll live in the crepe myrtle. Sometimes they'll live in something nearby it. They'll live in euonymus shrubs. They'll live in gardenias. You know, they'll. I think in the case of the property that you're talking about, they're probably in the Eleagnus that's out behind that. So, because they can get a nice place to live there. Someone wants us to know that there is a state spray program for tallow. Yeah, there's several. Yes, that's true. Tallow trees will take over.
Yeah, they don't
a farm.
Spray them when they're 100 feet tall, though. I don't
right.
think.
That's, that's our problem. And we do we wish people would treat the seedlings and get rid of them. But unfortunately, they don't always. Let's see. Well, we're on crepe myrtles today. That's great. When can I prune my crepe myrtles versus just trimming them back some? If you want to prune hard, you need to do that in January. While the tree is as dormant as it gets in the south. If you want to deadhead, if you want to take the old flowers off, if you've got extra growth you need to get rid of, you can do all that anytime. But when it comes to the actual shaping of the tree and heavier pruning, that's something to do in January. Which is quite frankly one of the things like pruning, I don't know, like pruning fruit trees. You know, we don't think about it until the fruit's on the tree, and then it's really much too late to do it then. If you have cooking pears, for example, that are weighing the limbs down, you can always prop those limbs up. But make yourself a note that that's something you need to prune and deal with when it gets to be January, because you don't want that. It'll break the whole limb, and then you lose the next 10 years of pears trying to regrow the tree. That's no fun. That's no fun at all. There's a couple of other things going on today in addition to our German language that we are celebrating. I don't usually do anniversaries of people's birthdays who are, you know, not alive, but Milton Hershey and Roald Dahl were both born this day. So, you know, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and Hershey's Chocolates, I say it's also National Peanut Day and National Chocolate Day. How did that happen? Ooh, you think they read the calendar? So I say ready, set, bake. I'm looking at blondies, peanut butter blondies with chocolate chips in them. What do you think? Let's get busy.
Please, yeah, let me have some.
Let's get busy. Meanwhile, we'll be back.
Homeowners, Sammy the Shovel here with an important message from Mississippi 811. Internet fiber expansions are being added, making it more important than ever to know exactly where your utilities lie when digging on your property. Whether it's simple landscaping or a large project, you need to call 811 at least 3 working days before you dig. Even with laws in place, safety is in your hands. Do the right thing and call 811 every dig, every time. You dig?
When it comes to returning money to Mississippians, Treasurer David McRae is on a roll. He's already returned hundreds of millions of dollars in unclaimed money to Mississippians through the Treasury's Unclaimed Money Program. Now he's refocused the state's college savings initiatives, MAX and IMPACT, to emphasize technical, trade, and teacher-focused careers, jobs, and skills Mississippi needs. Don't let another day go by without getting a jumpstart on a career or getting back the money that's yours. Visit Treasurer David McRae, treasury.ms.gov.
Just sending a little bit more information to Lawrence here on the text line. Talking about what he's going to do for those crepe myrtles. Yeah, it's a tough one. The systemics do work, and sometimes we have to realize, though, that the reason they work is because they work. So if the insects that are feeding on the crepe myrtle get a deadly dose from eating the plant that the systemic has been applied to, so will anything else that comes along. It's something that lasts for months and months, as opposed to a spray of pyrethrin or something that is, you know, gone in a day. So, interestingly enough, yeah, this is true, Chris. Chris has my experience of, he's been trying to, they've been at deer camp. Lance, you can relate now. I know this.
Heading up there today. Yeah.
Spraying Perilla, spraying mint, which have taken over. They are using serious chemical applications that are intended and used at the correct label amount and the correct surface tension and all of those things, and it comes back with a greater vengeance every year. People will say to me, why don't you use X, Y, or Z? And my first answer usually is because it doesn't work. It'll work the first time, but if you come back the next year, those things resurge. I've seen people spray gripeweed and think they've killed it, but they didn't pull the plant out, and so therefore the seeds were still there and more seeds produce, and there you go. You got the plant. You continue to have the problem. Perilla is the same way. So is mint. Both of those things, of course, are in the mint family. They both make that same tall flower, just like coleus does, just like basil does, and all, they're just, those are our seed factories. Their whole point of blooming like that is so they can not only provide nutrients and nectar to the pollinators, but so the pollinators can in turn move their pollen around and keep them going. And yes, they reseed rapidly and all over the place. If I had to do something, I would consider a pre-emerge herbicide. I don't know if I would spray if it's not working, but a pre-emerge herbicide would at least slow down the seeds that are coming back up, because that's what's happening. So, anyway, ask at your garden center or co-op for what's a good systemic to use in your crepe myrtles in your area. That would be the best thing. Kenneth in Starkville, how beautiful!
Isn't that
pretty?
My
goodness, that's gorgeous. Y'all, the hummingbirds have been fantastic. I don't know if y'all follow that gardening guy, Tim Burris, our buddy, in his beautiful wife Janet. They have hummingbirds, and the sound and the noise and everything is just crazy beautiful. It's so much fun. I hope y'all are paying attention to everybody that's sharing these with us, because this is what nobody else in the world can see at this moment, as well as you can, because it's here in your world, and that's what makes a big difference to all of us. Sure, there's hummingbirds all over the place, but when you see them and you're feeding them, you have a connection to them that other people don't have, and it's a wonderful thing. Kenneth, I do love the sedum, by the way. It looks like Autumn Joy, but I don't know which one it is. It's just really, really pretty. Just lovely. Oh, now somebody wants my recipe for peanut butter blondies. I don't have one. I make that sort of stuff up as I go along. It's just like making brownies. It's just not brown, you know, not with chocolate. Anyway.
It's a blondie.
It's a blondie. That's right. I guess I may as well give you a couple of bits of information that are exceedingly practical today. Now, if you take a look at the photos that are in the supertalk.tv feed today, you're going to see two things. First thing you're going to see is something looks like it just got eaten. That is to say, it's a little shrub, little Indian hawthorn shrub, and covered up with purple sweet potato vine. You want to know why you grow things in containers? Sometimes it's so you don't have that kind of a collision. And frankly, another one of the pictures that you'll see there is Sanchezia in a pot, which of course is a dark green leaf with bright yellow stripes in it, and a really pretty other version of that same sweet potato vine where it is contained in that pot. So it's not going to, you do have to keep it from climbing up the Sanchezia, of course, or whatever it's growing with, but you don't have to worry about it taking over your shrub bed because it won't do that. These are the things that we're going to talk about at the meetings next week. There's programs all day. We're in the demonstration section. You'll find me and Mark Peaches Patrick next Saturday. We'll be there, you know, from I think till about 3 o'clock in Ridgeland at the Renaissance. It's going to be a good event. We're going to have lots of fun. And what we're talking about, of course, is the best thing in the world to keep those big containers growing and keeping them going. So Peaches calls it six steps to a great pot, and he's got some really good ideas that I really wanted you to hear from me. We'll be looking at a good balance of leaf texture and their colors. That's where I'm talking about that Sanchezia and the purple sweet potato vine. Those things make a delightful contrast. Each one looks stronger because of its placement next to something that is so different from it. He wants you to look at, and I agree, alternating wow factors. You know, there's nothing worse than looking at a row of containers and they all look exactly the same. That's, you know, that's not what we're trying to do. You might be doing the four corners of a porch. You might be doing the edge of a swimming pool. You might be doing something under a tree where you've got room for two big pots. You don't want them to be exactly the same. So alternate those wow factors. You might be alternating something that's standing up tall versus something that's spilling out, or you might be doing it seasonally. Either way, it's going to be, you know, like in my case, one of my favorites is a dwarf Sasanqua that has daffodil bulbs in it and a little bit of perennial Stachys, but it also has blue fescue. So it's got something going on all year long just in that one container. That's called seasonal interest. But you can vary it. You can pick the season you want it to be interesting in and then keep it going through the others with sidebar plants, things that are fun but maybe not the center point of that particular container. Mark's best tip, I think, is to remind you that the tallest point in a combination pot should be no more than two-thirds the height of the container that it's in. Again, this is something you just have to practice until your eye is pleased by it. But it is important not only for the fact that it won't tip over, but because visually it's always going to look like it will tip over, okay, even if it's not physically going to do that. Don't be scared of a little drama, friends. Yep, that's right. It's okay to fall in love with a plant or with a pot and have to get it and build around it. That's perfectly all right. It's kind of how we do a lot of things in life, isn't it? I have, for example, my Vietnamese olive jar that came from Waterflow so long ago. It's still my favorite container. And I put another container inside of it to grow something because I don't want to plant it. Well, this year I think I'm finally going to turn it into a solar-topped little bit of a pool, little bit of a fountain maybe. I think that would be fun. Now, you got to take a little bit of a reality check. Sometimes you don't want to plant a big container full of a lot of plants because you think, well, what if one dies? What if one dies? Okay, something's not going to make it in every planting that there is, but that's adulting. You go ahead, you don't let yourself be knocked back by that. You go ahead and get up and get in there and plant it, and it's not brain surgery. It's just a container full of plants. Mark would advise you at that point to relax and have fun. I say, kick back and learn something. You will when you join us on September the 20th. Back to the really burgeoning text line today. Pretty, pretty marigold, Dave. That's really good looking. Dave's looking good today, too. This is, it's probably Cracker Jack, but if it was in a blend, there's no telling what it is. But it is a marigold, and I'll bet it's a smelly one. I love those. There is a yellow jacket nest near my hellebores. Oh, goodness. Well, I hate that. The best way to do that is, as we talked about before, Liquid 7. Liquid 7 is not going to hurt anything except for the yellow jackets as long as you're pouring it into the hole where the yellow jackets live. So mix it up, wait till dark, go over there, and as I've said before, be sure you mark where you're supposed to spray. Put a stick there, stand up your pitchfork, put a tool, do something. Because you don't want to have to be looking around in low light until you stir them up. You want to be pouring this directly onto them. It will help. That's split screen pictures are great. We're going to work on some identification later on. We really will. Oh, I see I'm sitting with pumpkins. That's fun. Those are gorgeous pumpkins, by the way. I don't know where they are. But
pumpkin season, man. I'm telling
they're
you.
Very pretty.
There's some beauties in there.
Really, really nice. Just beautiful pumpkins. Yeah, you know something about going around other gardeners. You can't help but learn something. You may pick up an idea that you like. You may pick up an idea that you definitely don't want to practice. But you will always find something going on. Gardeners are notorious. We hang out pretty much by ourselves. You know, get out there and do some work. And then, well, the next thing you know, you're sitting with a group of people. And everybody's talking about their yellow jackets, or everybody's talking about how many buds are on the Sasanqua, or everybody's talking about their pumpkins. That's what makes the difference in our world. We can't fix a lot of problems, but we can fix our gardens. And that's part of why I enjoy my work so much, that and the coffee. You know, so, mm-hmm. Yeah. I can't say I don't love that. No, I'm telling you, I don't have a blondie recipe. I guess I'll have to look for one. Oh, and something else I'm not going to do. Next week is National Housekeeping Week. I don't know. Every week has to be National Housekeeping Week, but I'm not going to celebrate it. I'm sorry. I'm just not going to do that.
Yeah, that's not going to happen for me either.
Not going to do that. Yeah. Sorry.
It's like National Don't Do Housework Week would be.
That would be. That we might do. Yeah. There's a couple of stories in the science world today, reports on research and one thing and another, that have really got me going. And I hope we have time to get into some of this today, simply because if you study something long enough, you realize that there's somebody studying it from the other point of view. And when the information comes to you in the way as dramatically as this does, the Norwegian University of Science and Technology, which admittedly is well known for its wellness and, you know, longevity programs, this is not a bunch of people just deciding to do a study. They have been studying stuff forever, and now they've studied this one daily habit that turns out could save you from chronic back pain. And it is, in fact, it's what your mother told you. Get up and get moving. That's it. That's it. You can't just lay around walking every day. It doesn't matter how fast, it doesn't really hardly matter how far, it's just that you do it every day, several times. You get up and walk around. Even low-intensity walking with participants walking over 100 minutes daily, experiencing lower risks to their back than people that walked less. Well, 100 minutes is not really that long if you're gardening. Come on, you're barely getting around out there. However, from Tour de Velotte, we have other information. They have been studying one of our very, very favorite creatures this particular creature does not seem to age at all. They're born, they grow up, and they look like that forever. Clearly not humans, but in this case, thanks to a flamingo tagging and tracking program that has been going on for 40 years, we now know that migratory flamingos don't live as long as the ones that stand still and stay at one place and probably stand still more of the time. The migrants, the ones that travel along the year, travel every year, along the shores of the Mediterranean, this is where you get into the anthropomorphizing of this. They're birds. But we would like to think that, well, they're more adventurous. You know, more things can happen to them because they leave and go. Well, no, stuff can happen if you stay home, too. Let's face it. So what they have discovered is that in this species, that's how it works. Fascinating stuff. The migratory flamingos endure early hardships. And if they make it, they actually age more slowly because apparently they have moved more. But it's still, you know, it's still that different approach to things, different look at things, and kind of have to decide whether you want to be a flamingo, whether you want to be. I would love for someone to be able to do this study about, you know, not all hummingbirds migrate. So do hummingbirds that migrate have a better life at the beginning and then age slower, or have a worse life at the beginning and age slower the way flamingos do? That's a tough one to call, but we'll see if we can find out. See if we can find out from it.
You'd think the ones that were worried the most would probably live the shortest, as far as like the hummingbirds and stuff. Like
if isn't that true?
Yeah, they were always worried about food and all that. Maybe they are the short
time.
Ones. Yeah.
Maybe that is it. Well, I see Paula got her cat back in Dentville. My goodness, that cat looks happy. So are we. Stick around. This is the Garden Mama Show.
Planning a home improvement project? Don't let your dream renovation become a nightmare. Before you hire any contractor, remember these three essential steps. Ask to see their current state license, check their insurance coverage, and always get at least three written estimates. Visit msboc.us to verify credentials and review complaints. Your home deserves a licensed professional because when it comes to construction, cutting corners could cost you everything. Call the Mississippi State Board of Contractors or go to msboc.us to learn more. A message from the Mississippi State Board of Contractors.
The Mississippi Propane Gas Association was founded in 1941 to represent and promote the views and goodwill of the propane industry. Visit propane.com to learn more about our dealers, suppliers, safety, and application of propane. Propane, energy for everyone. Visit propane.com. That's propane.com.
Hey, this is Bob. Just
y'all send me the most interesting questions. What is your favorite bulb? Well, good grief. Doesn't that depend on what day it is? I mean, come on.
The light bulb.
You have to, that too. And this particular season, I'm looking at all the grow light bulbs that I've managed to acquire, and I'm very happy about that because, you know, it does get dark eventually. But here's the deal. If I had to pick one today, it would be the Lycoris, but it would be Aureus, which is, of course, means golden. Aurora, you know, all those words that have that in it, that's all referring to gold, goddess of the dawn, gold. Anyway, the Lycoris, which is, of course, the red spider lily, is a beautiful, beautiful flower, but it has a cousin, the golden spider lily. Doesn't look exactly like it. It looks a little bit more of a whorl. It doesn't have the one flower with it with those beautiful fingers all ripping up around it. It has a little bit stronger forward trumpet. But it still has the really interesting spidery looking stuff on it. It's real pretty. They will demand well-drained soil. They will rot if they're not in it, unlike their red cousins. And they also benefit from having fertilizer. I've had a couple of them for a number of years, and they're really beautiful. Just lovely, lovely flowers. I think because they're unusual, and I also think because for some reason they remind me, well, not for some reason, they look sort of like in their flower structure, kind of an early version, you know, the really tiny business of a deciduous azalea flower, that same kind of whorled stature on top of a tall stem. It's just pretty, and I like it. Although, I got to tell you, as we were talking about plants to put into these big containers next week, we're going to plant, by the way, you know, half barrels, big things, so that we're not trying to show you that you can only plant, you know, $2,000 pots. But if you want to plant those, we'll be happy to help. But we want you to have something you can relate to and can possibly use at your own place. One of the perennials that I hope that we're going to be able to find to use is guara. It is not as gorgeous right now as it is perhaps in the spring and earlier part of the summer, but it's one of those perennials that even when it has just a few flowers on it, changes the entire direction of the group. If you don't know guara, it is real thin. I describe the leaves as looking, the stems and leaves looking, because they don't have any leaves that stick out. They're all cylindrical. It looks kind of like guitar strings. And they actually do move in that same way. That's what keeps them dancing. That's why the flowers are so dramatic. Makes a big difference in what you're adding to your planter when, for example, you're trying to go from some of that spring and summer seasonal interest that we've talked about. I know that there are a couple of others that we're going to be looking towards putting together. I hadn't mentioned Stackus to you in a while. You often feel like Stackus dies, but it actually just usually burns up in the summer and then comes right back up again. And in my case, that's what this is doing. It's another one that you might have overshadowed by something that's blooming a whole lot in the summertime, but when it's like a geranium, it's going to come back when the weather cools off. So just something to think about. The way we combine those things and the way that we put them all together does make a difference in the way that they look and the way that they affect us. One of the big things I think about container gardening is that because you can bring the plants up close to you, it makes it a little easier to take care of things sometimes, but it also means that you may not be looking at the overall plant. You may be looking at one leaf. So take a chance to step back. I always talk about when you're pruning, do a little bit and then step back, because you can always take off more, but you can't necessarily put any back. And in the case of planting a container, once you've got a group of things in there, it's kind of hard to upset them and undo stuff. If you really decide something you don't like, yeah, you have to take it apart. But if you'll do it a little at the time and look at things in their containers right next to one another, you'll find that you can say, oh, well, I do like those two together, or no, this one's going to dominate that one. It's like trying to find something to plant in a container with a banana plant. Very difficult. Now, except maybe another banana plant with different leaves. You know, it's a difficult one to make work. I don't know why exactly I described the fall asters to the extent that I did last week. Somebody sent me a note this week and said that they were just starting to see them, and why was I so obsessed with them? I really think it's because we don't appreciate those plants. They're in that group that I call, even when we cut them for cut flowers, they're the roadside flowers. They're the things that we might cultivate, but we might just pick on a regular basis. Think about Boltonia, think about goldenrod, think about ironweed or vernonia. Those are things that we can use in our plantings. We can use them in our garden beds. We can use them in containers. We can also even use them as plants that we refer to as native lovelies, because frankly, there's some beautiful plants that we don't appreciate enough. Sometimes I think that's because they're blooming in the fall. We're on our way. We're busy. We're headed someplace else. But sometimes it's just because we're missing them. We just don't notice that they're there. So I encourage you to take a peek at some of those. See if you can't find a couple of asters to add in. Yeah, the mums are nice. I love them too. But the asters are a little bit daintier and a little bit different. So take a look for them as well. I've been mixing up some soil this week for some container plants, and yes, I've been using Coast of Maine. I'm happy to tell you it's turned out to be a really, really good choice on my part. I'm using one of their container composts along with a little bit of the what's actually meant for growing vegetables in it, because it has quite a bit more fertilizer, but I was putting in some things that needed a little more fertilizer in there, so add up a little bit and work that in there. I see that coming up on the screen now is my odd collection of cloches, garden covers for beds, covers for containers, covers for individual plants. I'm going to talk about that in the next hour, so if you have any that you want to send us pictures of, by all means do that. You can send them to lance@telesouth.com, and he will make sure that they get up there on our...
Yeah, give me the text line. That's the best way to get any images
I don't happen to have it in front of me, so you'll have to tell them what it is.
Yeah, 601-879-4395. Get those pictures, you know, just put them into text, send them to me. I'll pick them out and then put them on the screen. That's the easiest way to get them to me, and we greatly appreciate all of them.
Well, good. One of the things that is amazing to me is what good photographers, I don't know that everybody's a good photographer, but the folks that send us photographs are good photographers. We've been seeing some beautiful flowers, beautiful cats. Thank you, Paula.
Yeah, the cat was great.
Yeah.
It's kind of the way you want to.
I should be so happy.
About lunchtime after a good
exactly,
meal.
Exactly. That cat is snoozing. I love that. It's fun stuff. All right, there's the pumpkin. All right, that's really wonderful. Go, Kathy. That's great. You remember us talking with Kathy about having a skunk in the garden last time?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And this is her 3 months of watering, but it finally is a mini pumpkin. Wish I had more. It's going to be a little while before this one fills out entirely, of course. It is a mini right now, but I'm going to take this moment to stress that when you're growing any kind of a vine that you want to produce in, for example, Merlotons or any of these, build a reservoir so that you can keep water and fertilizer in there all the time. Even if it seems to be raining, they need more water and fertilizer than they're going to get. So just add that to your list, Kathy. Oh, my goodness. Oh, this is great. Thank you. Now, listen, we got an hour of Garden Mama to go now. We're going to talk about some stuff. We got places to be, things to do, but you need to be right here with me. See you in a little bit. This is the Garden Mama Show.
You are the only thing to help me through. Don't take her for granted. She has a hard time. You got to know.
We are advocacy, a century of wins, protecting private property rights, advancing technology, sustaining our land, conserving our natural resources, all to pass on to the next generation. We are the Mississippi Farm Bureau Federation, 100 years and counting. Become a member today at msfb.org.
Hello, I'm Sean Tindall, Commissioner of the Mississippi Department of Public Safety. Since 2021, Mississippi has seen a 25% reduction in fatalities involving crashes with commercial motor vehicles. Many of those crashes could have been avoided. DPS, through its MHP's Motor Carrier Unit and the Commercial Transportation Enforcement Division, is partnering with Big Rig Truckers to conduct safety checks across our state for the Trooper and Trucker Safety Initiative. The Department of Public Safety and the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration are working together to keep our highways safe for everyone. Thank you, and drive safely.
Sounds wonderful. They're famous for it. There's 25,000 people go to this thing. They have 6 different venues for tastings and cooking classes. I'm thinking we need to be there. I don't know exactly how to put this to you, but it is only 6 miles from the English border and therefore presents itself as the gateway to Wales. So you basically have to eat your way through this town in order to get to the rest of the country. I like that idea. I like that idea very, very much. Abergavenny. Haven't been there, but we'll be looking at tickets. This could be a stop after the fabulous Edinburgh Festival that I really do want to go to, but it's a ways away. We'll have to see about that. Find somebody with an airplane. That might not be that hard. Good morning, the text line. What is your view on deadheading hydrangeas? I love it. Couple of reasons. First of all, if you deadhead early in the summer, they've just finished blooming and they're beginning to change color a little bit. That helps to promote growth in the hydrangea. That's a perfect time to prune them. You can cut out, there may be 2 of the canes that are rubbing each other. There could be some that are broken down inside there. You know, take all that out, but that's the time to do that kind of work. And it also accomplishes deadheading, which if this is a reblooming hydrangea, of course, will put it into a bloom cycle for the second or third time that year. But it's also a really good point to tell you that if it's a traditional, old-fashioned, round-headed hydrangea, it's going to bloom on the wood that it grows this summer. So by deadheading it at least, or by pruning it a little bit after that first bloom, you can really do yourself and the shrub a whole lot of good. I like to deadhead. If they're still on there at this point in the year, they become part of the decorations for the winter holidays. They're absolutely beautiful stacked up in a tall glass jar just by themselves with their natural colors. But there is spray paint. There is gold leaf. There are lots of things you can do. And one of my very favorites is a hydrangea topiary, which is always done with the dried hydrangeas and is a really beautiful ornament. It makes a wonderful decoration in your house. It's perfect centerpiece for like a buffet table or a side table or even in your foyer. And it's a wonderful gift for anybody, particularly if they live in some kind of congregational facility, you know, where you have a lot of folks and not a whole lot of space. You may not have room for a whole tree, but you can certainly make a really nice statement with a hydrangea topiary. So I'm in favor of it. Some folks don't cut off any of the flowers from the later bloomers, say the paniculatas, for example, limelights, or even the oak leaf hydrangeas. I'm still going to cut some of their flowers off. They grow slower. They're not necessarily going to be blooming. They don't bloom on this year. They bloom on next year's wood, but they do need to be pruned. At the same time, their flowers are very attractive, so why not enjoy them in, you know, a vase or something like that? I have no problem with you doing that. There are a couple of other kinds of hydrangeas that we don't think about so much. A few people have the PGs or the sort of vining ones. And those are usually cut back in the early spring, I believe. It's not one that I grow that often, but I have seen them, and they're very pretty. Do you do garden cloches? There's a lot of reasons. At this time of the year, there are a lot of reasons to begin thinking about what you're going to do. And what you're going to do, for example, is fertilize the plants that are going to be coming into the house because the weather will be too chilly for them, or too rainy, or too wet, or too something outside for them. And this is the time to go ahead and clean their pots out. If they got bugs, deal with that. But make sure that if they've got roots coming out the bottom, you go ahead and repot them before you need to bring them in the house. It's all of these little housekeeping details make a great deal of sense. See, I told you next week is National Housekeeping Week. Well, we're going to make it National Plant Keeping Week. So see to all your containers, clean off their outsides, clean out the spider webs, take out the roly-polies, let them all stay in the yard, you know. And, of course, there's a lot to be done to get them ready if there's problems. But if there's not problems, just do your basic housekeeping and they'll be fine. Then we're going to talk about garden cloches. If you've got plants that you want to protect through the winter, and I mean even things that grow through the winter, for example, parsley, we don't want it to be set back. A lot of times I don't want the herbs to be set back. I want to continue to be able to use them. And a cloche is a simple thing to keep that intact, keep them growing, keep cold winds or heavy rain or drought. All those things can be a problem in the fall and winter. But if you will cloche them, then you can also control how much water they're getting as well as the amount of fertilizer. But you've also got them away from the wind and the chilly temperatures. That keeps your healthy green parsley or thyme or whatever you might be growing in the perennial herb department or the overwintering herb department. Keep that going. Like a greenhouse, cloches offer a little bit of climate control and some protection also from pests. So this is an important consideration to have. If you have got, I'm sure you've started some of your greens. You've got mustard greens coming up. Maybe you've got some turnips. Maybe you've got other ones growing at this point. I hope you've planted your spinach. This is the point where you really want them to grow. So if the weather's cooling off where you are, a cloche dropped on them will help to maintain a warmer growing temperature around those greens for several more hours in the day than you would have otherwise. It's just a benefit. It extends the growing season, but it can also extend the growing day. Protects your seedlings from those threats. Also holds in the heat and humidity. That's, as I was saying, you may feel like things are cooling off a little bit too much and you would like them to be just a little bit warmer, but you don't want to put this thing in a greenhouse. It's a collard green, for heaven's sake. Give it a cloche, and you can also make them out of almost anything. They're not expensive to produce. Lots of ideas. We've got some at supertalk.tv today, and of course other ones if you'd like to get in touch with me. I'll be happy to help you figure out what you want to make them out of. If I was starting, I would probably start with PVC and cedar, because both of those things are almost indestructible. Corinne in Jackson. Oh dear, we have to play taps. Her Graham Thomas Rose, after 15 years, Graham Thomas Rose died this summer. Now, it's coming back up, but she knows it's from below the graft. that particular rose does grow from a graft. So it will be a wild card, as she says. Yes, it will. And it might be pretty. It might not. It will be vigorous, because that's why we graft onto it, is because it is vigorous and can tolerate conditions. For example, the wet soil of this summer, or the heat, or whatever it is that took down the top part, is going to be all right. But I would just watch it. You may want to take up grafting. And this is something that not enough people even think about doing. But grafting is one of those things that it's a hobby. Once you take it up, everybody just loves it. They're crazy for doing it. So we'll see whether or not that works out for you. But yes, I would go ahead. It's going to be a surprise. It's easier with citrus when the top half of a citrus tree dies and the below the graft sprouts. Generally speaking, if it sprouts with a lot of thorns, it is citrus trifoliata. And it will make an orange, but it's not one that is nearly as good as the desirable citrus that you had grafted to it. But people graft to that even after one passes up on them, and they'll give themselves the opportunity to start another plant. So I can give you some references. In most places, there's somebody that grafts, and in many cases, I happen to know where they are. So I wonder, did you ever get any pumpkins? Corinne was worrying about her pumpkins last time. Interesting. I have seen some pretty pumpkins, but never any as pretty as the pictures that you're putting up today, Lance. I wish
pumpkin
I could.
Season.
I mean, it is. We are in the midst of it.
Is there? I always see so many different styles. You have the total orange, like the truck I had, the '76 Chevy, growing up. We called it the pumpkin. But you also have so many bright and vibrant, spotted and striped. And I mean, what is the Is there a genus or something that you're looking for, a family of pumpkin? If you're going, I want this, extremely ornate and with the little knots and stuff. Like, what are those?
There are classes of pumpkins and colors of pumpkins and sizes of pumpkins. And it really, in some cases, is two or three pages in the seed catalog, because there are so many to discuss. They're all squash. They're all in that same family as, summer squash and zucchinis and acorn squash and butternut squash. All of those things are all in the pumpkin family. And other people would say those things are all in the pumpkin family. I'm sure the pumpkins feel that way. But it's very true that they are. It's extensive. And, some farmer grows one, and one of the seedlings that comes up next year turns out to be blue. Well, okay, that's pretty neat. Let's grow that one. And then if those seeds turn out blue, we've got a new pumpkin, or we have a stripe that none of the rest of them have. And if we can get that to turn into a stable form, then we've got ourselves a really good way to get a new pumpkin out of the business. I used to think that the turban ones had to be put together. When I was a little kid, I would see those ones that have turbans on them. I thought they must have squished two pumpkins together. They don't. That was just a childhood fantasy. But they do look like hats, and that's how that turns out to get everybody excited about it. I did see some folks making really cute pumpkin. It's not like decorations like on a tree, but a wreath that was just pumpkins, and it was just beautiful. They were little pumpkins, maybe 4 inches across, and then some that were even tinier that I think were real. But the real pumpkins were there, and they were just lovely. So get with it. Do all of that stuff. It's fun. One of the other pieces about doing your own cloches is that you can use it as an opportunity to recycle a lot of stuff. In my case, I'm always looking for a way to use up gallon milk jugs, or, there's always something in everybody's house that they wish they could figure out a way to use. Those are good ones, both for the pumpkin reservoir that I was talking about, as well as a cloche to cover up your new plants when they're babies and the weather's going to turn bad on you. But they work in two different ways. If you're going to make a cloche out of a gallon jug, of course, you're going to cut the bottom out of it. So you've got the larger part of it is open. Then the top on it is going to stay, because then you can put it on top of your individual plant, like your broccoli transplant maybe, or something like that. Close the top of it, and then it will warm up nicely in there. But when it gets a little too warm, you can take the top off. So that's one of the things that's useful about using a gallon jug for that purpose. Some folks will also turn right around and use that the other way, leave the bottom on it, poke a few holes in it, and then use the top as a way to pour in the water and fertilizer. So you're burying half of that gallon jug next to your pumpkin plant, and you're creating a reservoir. You can do that for a lot of things. Some people will do that when they plant fruit trees, for example, because they don't necessarily, the tree is too small to hook on one of those grow bags, the gator bags that carries water in it. But sometimes they're too small for that. So I like that. There also are ways to move things into a little bit later. I have a really big, it's a steel trash can that's made out of wire, okay? And it makes a wonderful top for things like a pepper plant. When the weather turns chilly, you can put a little plastic on top of that, cover it up, and the pepper will keep on growing for another several weeks without even blinking, maybe even to the point of ripening. Some of its peppers are certainly producing as many as you can take off and enjoy and eat. So think about the uses of cloches and just put them to work for yourself. I think it's a great thing to have. I think that whether you're using individual plant cloches or whether you're doing something like taking, you know, people will use all sorts of stuff, but you can use any kind of plastic structure and put on top of that literal plastic. You've got yourself a clear way in. Sometimes folks will put the reason they have sides on their beds is so that they can just put the cloche on top of that. So there's a way you'll work it out for yourself. It's fun. Thanks, Chris. Chris's peanuts are just beautiful. It's just really wonderful. I wish that we were riding in that truck right now, Lance. We could be eating some peanuts. That's fun.
Mississippi produces a great amount of peanuts. Oh, I've learned over the years.
They're the best ones.
You throw out some sweet potatoes, some peanuts, all kind of good stuff.
Terry in Tupelo has a sweet potato vine houseplant. Well, that's dramatic. That appears to have the leaves being eaten pretty severely. Can I use something like 7-Dust to try and control it? Depends on what's doing it. If they're chewing big holes in it, that will probably work, but you'll still need to look under the leaves and find the caterpillar that's doing the damage. But if you're going to use a dust like that on a house plant, I'm going to take it outside to do that. I don't want to start dusting 7-Dust in the house unless I'm, you know, intending to do that. There's uses for it, but you wouldn't want to treat your house plant right in your kitchen, you know. Now, Chris is on his way to boiling those peanuts. And I say, okay, but I like them roasted.
I'll eat them anyway.
I'm sure. Yeah. I don't doubt
lightly
that.
Lightly salted, Cajun seasoned, boiled, baked, browned, whatever. I'll even pull one out of the ground and eat it raw just to, you know, make sure you got to drink about four beers.
I was going
to
say, I don't want to be there for that one. I don't think I can do that.
Where's the beer after one of those?
Now, I tell you what, I will go out and eat corn on the cob or green beans in the garden.
Yeah, I mean, I'm telling you, man, you know? The raw stuff is fun.
And Chris loves the raw. He's agreeing with you on that.
You have some good teeth, though.
Well, maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's the link.
I don't mean it for you. I'm saying it. Boy, it was funny. We had one of our amazing listeners. It always, anytime I talk about teeth, it reminds me of a story that one of our listeners said, we heard you and Paul were talking about peanut butter brittle on air, and my husband and I make peanut butter brittle, and I will drop you some by one day. And I told Paul, he's like, oh man, you have to bring me some out. So she brought this beautiful peanut butter brittle, and I broke it up like you're supposed to. I didn't try to like put it in my mouth and break it off like a plate,
right,
like it was a, you know, china plate.
Yeah, it's serious
stuff.
So
we get on air the next day after I'd taken it out there to him, and he has a piece of the brittle, and he chomps down on it.
During the
break, he was like, oh my God, I think I broke a tooth. Man, you're supposed to break it up first.
That's why you shatter it
he
first.
He sat there and sucked on that piece of brittle for a minute. And he's I think this is the best thing I've ever eaten. But it was hilarious. So anytime you talk about teeth, I always, or something like that, I just have that moment where I just hearing him going, crunch, crack. Oh my God.
That's so funny.
Yeah, you got to be careful on that raw stuff.
And you really do have to be careful. You really do. That's for sure.
If you've got chompers.
Yeah. We miss him, and his humor, though, stays with us, and that's delightful. Well, I asked a question and I got the answer. Did Corinne's pumpkin ever make a pumpkin? Yes, we've made one pumpkin. We seems to be the land of one pumpkins today, but y'all are doing great. Coming right along with it. That's really fun. It'll grow bigger. You got another 6 weeks, really. You can do that. Anyway, she does have a reservoir. It's just been a crummy pumpkin year in some places, but not others. Stick around now. We're going to talk about a few other things today. I've got a couple of surprises for you. This is the Garden Mama Show.
Are you a business owner looking for help with HR benefits and payroll? MWG Employer Services offers a wide range of services and can create a custom plan that fits your needs and budget.
I was so overwhelmed with HR stuff. MWG Employer Services took all the stress out of it and even set up my payroll. I couldn't be happier.
MWG Employer Services is here to help you succeed. Call us today at 601-206-7966 or go to MWGEmployerServices.com.
Pine Grove Behavioral Health and Addiction Services, located in Hattiesburg, is one of the nation's most comprehensive treatment campuses. Pine Grove provides the highest quality mental health care and addiction treatment for children, adolescents, and adults. Pine Grove offers many levels of care, including day and evening addiction treatment programs for working professionals. For more info, please call 1-888-574-HOPE and visit pinegrovetreatment.com.
The best made to
Welcome back. One of the questions I don't know if these are people that ask this question because they want somebody else to do this or because they're trying to keep people from watching too much football, which, by the way, I should tell you that should we ever be preempted for football, we're always on the stream at supertalk.fm. Don't forget about that. Can I do some lawn repaired work now? When that question comes to me in mid-September, I always wonder if it's really me that's asking that question, because sometimes it's not. They had some work done on their house, and there are deep ruts in the side yard. This really is the time to deal with those kind of problems. If you have this, take advantage of the dry patches that we're in right now, because you've got to fill those things in. But you also, if the yard has been rutted, if you have pitchforks, if you have the muscle power to do it, lifting some of that up does help as well. You may have to actually be recultivating those spaces. What you're trying not to do is have them become permanent ruts that you and your lawnmower can both fall in as you are trying to take care of the yard. So I would maybe start some sun, maybe pull out the weeds that are no doubt growing in those ruts by now. But if you can do it now rather than waiting for the winter rains to start eroding those things, it will be to your advantage. Now, yes, I grant there's people out there right now stomping and saying no good contractor should ever have left that mess. Well, okay, that's all true, but what are we going to do now is the business of this program. And the business of this program is fill in the ruts. If you've got good grass down there, go ahead and lift it off with a shovel, set it aside, fill the ruts in, work them back out, and then replant the grass. And you'll be glad you can do that. You can certainly get other sod. You can get seeds if it's a seed that's appropriate, a seeded lawn that will be appropriate. But you don't want to leave it. You absolutely don't want to leave it. People are planting turnips and mustard greens, turnip greens, mustard greens, Swiss chard, beets. Good grief, spinach. I mean, everything's getting going now. So what's your favorite? Do you like mesclun? Do you prefer I don't know. What do you like? Now is the time to do all of those things. It's important to work the soil up so it's not lumpy, which is another reason we sometimes grow vegetables and things in containers, because we have more control over that environment. But it's also true that if you have not limed the area for your spinach, we know that it can be really finicky. You plant the spinach and it'll just kind of sit there if the pH is not right. So go ahead and mix up, crush up some eggshells. Yes, make a frittata or something and crush up those eggshells so you can make a nice, really, really good drench for them. It doesn't solve the problem, but it will help them in the short term. You still need to make a better effort at liming if you're going to grow spinach in any quantity. Really important. Really, really important to do that. So many events going on in the fall. My goodness. I don't even know. I think that we have to really look around and pick and choose. I hope that you will pick and choose to come to Ridgeland next Saturday to see us, Mark and I, demonstrate, but also to see these other great speakers. It's going to be a good, good program, one that you will enjoy very, very much. It's going to be a beautiful day for it, too. Here's a good question about succession planting. We want to plant broccoli in the flower bed, but we were growing tomatoes there this summer and they didn't do too well. Will it work? What should we do to the soil? Yeah, it'll work. And it's not something you don't want to follow tomatoes with potatoes or necessarily any of the Solanaceae family eggplants and whatnot. But you can certainly come in with broccoli. If it stayed too wet, you may want to address that. If you just feel like it was a bad year for tomatoes and everything else in the bed was doing fine, then I wouldn't do much to it. I would turn the soil over, make sure you got all the tomato out of there, turn the soil over and give yourself the opportunity to work in a little bit of fertilizer so that when your broccoli grows down into that depth, maybe 3 or 4 inches below the soil surface, it will hit some fertilizer. But it's also a really good idea, if you haven't already done this, to water in with a vermicompost, Wormwise, or Coast of Maine, or just do something that's going to give them a little bit of a boost when they get started growing. If you have to, sometimes there's a problem and the broccoli just doesn't seem like it's doing well, and you look around and realize that it's staying too wet or too dry. It's still okay if you can lift up the whole thing. If it's less than a foot tall, if you can lift it up with a trowel and just maybe fix the soil underneath it and replant it or move it to another space, that's all okay. The broccoli will survive. It'll be okay. Yeah, I don't think you have a big problem with that. My goodness. Nobody ever asks me about Fermiana simplex. Those of you who know it, varnish tree, those of you who know it know that it is lovely. It's also called Chinese parasol tree, Japanese varnish tree. It's a lovely tree. It is one of those things that is hard to find until you see it, and then suddenly there'll be a bunch of them. So this person was saying that theirs got pruned, and will it grow back? Probably. If it doesn't grow back is the question, where to get another one, because they couldn't find anything online. You probably can't find that particular plant. I don't know. I have one or two places I might ask if they have it, but I don't know that they do. So I would suggest that you're going to want to haunt plant swaps and giveaways, and if you see the trees growing somewhere, make sure that you find out about the master gardeners in that county, and they'll be the ones that will more than likely have that. It is a beautiful tree, and one that is more popular probably around Hattiesburg. These folks were in Tupelo, but it's much more popular further south, so something to think about. My goodness, I don't know exactly what your point of view is about things, but it seems to me like the more we learn, the more we learn. The only diatoms, and I know about diatoms, okay, I studied these things, but the most I know about diatoms really in terms of gardening is the fact that I have the opportunity to use them as diatomaceous earth. Diatomaceous earth is what we spread around small plants to keep slugs and snails from coming up to them. It's helpful for things like putting into the clumps of cannas to keep the canna leaf rollers from being able to get going too well in there. You know, that's really a useful garden thing. Diatomaceous earth is just real powerful. You got to make sure you get the one for gardening and not the one for filters and swimming pool use, because that's a different part of that world, but it is all still diatoms. I did not know how much more there is to know about diatoms, but I'm learning every day. Northern Arizona University is letting us know that nature's nutrient factories are actually diatoms and some of their friends, the bacteria. You know why? Because they feed the insects, and those in turn feed the salmon. And that, in turn, is how you have the beautiful salmon in California's Eel River, which, by the way, is a beautiful place if you've never been there. This is really very cool. This could help us with sustainable farming. It could help us with several others. As you can imagine, if we can figure out a way to use diatoms and bacteria to fulfill our nutrient needs for the things that we're in turn eating, is really, really powerful stuff. This is in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, which is no small journal to be part of. The partnership between this algae and bacteria works really like a clean nitrogen machine. I know that sounds like I'm, you know, in the middle of the night doing an infomercial, but that's actually the language that is used here. Nitrogen from the air, think legumes, you know, we know the beans and peas do this, into food that fuels ecosystems without rivers or pollution. That in turn creates more food for the salmon and a healthier environment for them. So I think we really do have to consider we have to consider the young salmon in this and make sure that they're getting everything they need, and diatoms can be a help in that. I have one more diatom story. Are you ready? Of course you are. Stanford University studies things that are very much essential. They're known for basic science as well as applied science, but they're known for basic science. So, you got to go somewhere to study, so let's go get cores from the Arctic, right? Sure. You think, well, that's, 10-foot-long piece of ice. What's going to be in there? Nothing. You know what they say about assumptions. Don't make any assumptions on this one. Diatoms are not dormant in the Arctic. They are, now, when you look at drawings of diatoms, they don't all look at the same, but they all have a glass piece, a glass looking, I should say. They're not glass, but they all have a glass looking side. If you take the diatomaceous earth that you use in your garden and it has been chopped up, it has an edge on it that is a glassine type edge. That's really what the power of the diatoms is. So these glass walled algae, as they say, use their structure to glide through frozen channels in sub-zero temperatures, record-breaking fast, just faster than they would have ever imagined, even if they thought they could do it, which they didn't. How do they do this? I don't know what a molecular motor is, but they've got some. I don't know what mucus-like ropes are, but they've got those too. So this is all, of course, at the microscopic level, this is all happening. This kind of resilience and understanding about how life adapts in severe, strongly severe circumstances is instructive to us, not just about the diatoms, although I'm happy to know more about them, but obviously for the overage, the extra things that it could generate for us, the knowledge that we might be able to get hold of if we can understand. You know, there's a lot to be said for us being able to study the polars, because we can get to the poles, but there's also parts of the poles that we also know are not going to be there in 10 years, maybe even less than that. So we better get to studying. If you have an interest in any of these areas, this is the time to get busy and get yourself, learning about the tiny skaters from Stanford University or something. It's fascinating stuff. I love it. I just love it. The question, of course, of what do you do in your garden what if you only got a minute? You know, you can do all these projects and these things take weeks and can go on, but what if you've only got that 1 hour a day? What if you've only got enough time to do one or two things? Deadheading the hydrangeas is a great idea. Grooming other plants is a great idea. Making sure that you're putting those situations in place so that you're not bringing bugs into the house, and test your grow lights. If you're going to add a bunch of plants to a dark corner in the living room, get yourself some light bulbs. Make sure that they're working if you've got some old ones. Do all of that. You know, it's very much like the old. We used to hear about take your tools in the fall and go and you know, drain the oil and gas out of them and do all these things to put them away. So many of us in the South barely stop using them, even, you know, maybe for a couple of months. But you should still take the time to clean them and make sure that they are in good serviceable condition before you roll them into the garage for the a couple of months till you need to pull them back out again. After a couple of hundred years of mowing, I know we haven't been mowing that long, but it's a reference that I like to make. After a couple hundred years of mowing lawns, you'd think we've figured that out, but we haven't. That's the same reason why I tell you consistently, if somebody else mows your yard with a lawnmower that goes to other yards, or if you do that yourself, rinse off that deck, clean it off before you bring it back to use at your place. We don't need to be spreading brown patch around. We don't need to be spreading weed seeds. We certainly don't need to be spreading weed seeds around. You know how that is. It's a terrible problem. Sarland University wants us to know the real reason that ice is slippery. Did we have any doubts about this? 200 years, everybody thought that pressure and friction melted that thin film of water, and that's why it was slippery. Nope, that's not it. There have been a couple of explanations along the way that were kind of, really, is that what you think? But this one makes a little bit more sense. Now, anytime you say subtle interaction, you know you're not necessarily talking about me because there's not a whole lot subtle about this particular gardener. But the subtle interaction of molecular dipoles between the ice and your shoes or your skis or whatever's hitting it on top. This is crazy. The slipperiness comes because of those two things working together, not because of the melting, not because that it's not slick because it forms a thin film of water. It is slick because it is the nature of it to be slick. I love this. I really think that somebody needs to consider this. If we can figure out a way to apply, you know, to get some of this thin liquid layer business going on there, can't we revolutionize skiing? Could we make some money? Probably. Let's think about that. We'll be right back.
I'm Brad Phillips from Yazoo City, Mississippi. I'm proud to be Mississippi's Catfish Farmer of the Year. Catfish farming takes a lot of hard work, but it's worth it to provide your family the best, freshest, healthiest fish available. When you buy U.S. catfish, you get that perfectly mild flavor every time, and you're supporting local jobs. Always look for the U.S. Farm-Raised Catfish Seal. Find recipes and restaurants at uscatfish.com.
Thinking about that big home project? In Mississippi, the law requires a licensed contractor for residential projects, including new home construction over $50,000, home remodeling or improvements, including roofing over $10,000. All subcontractors performing residential, electrical, plumbing, or HVAC work on new home construction projects over $50,000 or home improvement projects over $10,000. Don't risk your investment. Visit msboc.us. To verify a contractor's license today. A message from the Mississippi State Board of Contractors.
Friday night's just got a...
Greg's a man after my own garden. 6 mil plastic, hoops over the beds. The raised beds are really good looking too, and hoops over them that provide the cold cover. That looks really, really good. Greg's in Vaughn. If you hadn't figured this out, you should figure this out. Let me start that again. There's going to be a day you're going to wish you already had. So get yourself some get yourself some covers going. Get you a close.
Get some Visqueen, as my dad
That's
would
right.
say.
Get some Visqueen. He's right. Oh, by the way, speaking of that Welsh stew, the caul, that's a lamb stew, which can also be made, by the way, of course, with beef or pork, because, you know, we're humans. I think I'm in trouble. It has parsnips in it. So now I'm going to be proven wrong. I'm going to make this stuff, and I'm going to like the parsnips. And then what am I going to do? Because I usually don't.
You just have to turn over
adapt.
A new leaf.
I'll have to turn over a new leaf. That's right. I didn't know I was going to like Abel Skeevers till I ate some. So, you know.
I don't even know what you're talking about. What's an Abel Skeever?
Oh, come on. You know those little round pans, and you look at them in the Williams-Sonoma, and you go, what does anybody do with that? It's a cast iron pan that's got spaces in it that are intended to be baked in, but they're round. They're like a cross between a biscuit and a donut. There's whole restaurants built around them. They're famous.
Okay, I'll have to look this up. Thank you. See, you learn every day.
Sort of pancakey donuts, sort of fluffy donuts, maybe, I think, is how I would describe it. It's like everything else. There was a Danish Christmas treat, and, you know, people got hold of it and said, well, I could eat that any time of the year, so that's what people do. But a lot of times, I think at some point, those pans were one of the, you know, like in certain decades, if you got your own house or you got married or you whatever, they gave you a fondue pot, okay? I think somebody gets an, other times people got Abel Skeever pots. I'm pretty sure that's how I ended up with one. But they're spiffy looking, and they do make a very nice treat. It's an interesting thing, though. Somebody showed it to me. It was like a round. They said, here, this is a round breakfast thing. And I went, so? I was afraid it was going to have an egg in it, you know, or something. But it wasn't. It was really good. Fascinating stuff. The biggest part of the garden right now is getting yourself ready for what comes next, and whether that might be cold weather, windy weather, wet weather. Those cloches are a good idea, but it's also time to be sure that you've planted, because if you need your seeds to come up, this is ideal circumstances for the mustards and the collards and even beets, and we're getting close to carrots, you know, y'all, come on, it's time. And if you like to eat them, and if you've noticed the prices going up in your grocery stores, you can grow some of your own food. I can't, I still can't press my own olive oil, but I can grow some of my own food. Olive oil's not that expensive. Lance, I don't know what to do about this, but today is two things that don't make any sense when taken together. And so I feel like the people that organized the calendar just weren't paying enough attention. Today is Defy Superstition Day. In other words, step on the crack. It will not break your mother's back. You know, whatever
we're like a month early on this.
Whatever the superstitions are that you have, defy them so that they don't take you down, I guess, by Halloween. But it's also Positive Thinking Day. Which seems kind of contrary to the notion of defying myself. If I'm going to worry about the superstitions, am I going to think positively about the superstitions? What do they want me to do here? I don't really know.
Yeah, thinking. I see what you're saying there. Yeah, I was like, where is she going? But yeah,
where is she going?
But you're supposed to think positive. Then a superstition today would be a good thing.
Apparently,
and yet you're supposed to get rid of superstition
today.
Yes, right,
exactly.
I understand.
Very so let's contrarian. Just speak German and move forward. You know, that's what I
go
say.
With my limited vocabulary of
go with
words.
My six words. Yeah. Yeah, you know way more than I do. I do have a story that I have been kind of not wanting to tell you because it's not one that either one of us can like. But black holes have just proven Stephen Hawking and Einstein correct. Don't you just love that? This is the clearest signal ever recorded from the European Gravitational Observatory. When two black holes crash into each other, we're in Stephen Hawking's world. And so that's how we know these things. Signal came back in 2015. It had traveled 1.3 billion years to reach us at the speed of light, but it was not made out of light, which is what is so cool, which is why I'm almost hesitant to even talk about it. This is a different kind of signal, a quivering of space-time called gravitational waves that Einstein predicted 100 years before in 1815. Is that wild? Come on now.
Wow.
I mean, in 1915, not 1815, in 1915. And if you think people have to be devoted to do this or that, if you're going to be a theoretical physicist, you better have a long life expectancy and be very dedicated to what happens next, because that is literally how this works. Hawking and another physicist, Bekenstein, concluded that the black hole's area is proportional to its entropy, or to, in other words, to its degree of disorder, and that's why the sound of two crashing together is strong enough to get to us, is how it seems to read to me. I love that. 1.3 billion years, light years. Except it's not light. Wow, that's just great stuff. Really wonderful stuff. Got brand new blooms coming up on the night bloom in Sirius. One more round before it goes to sleep for the year. You've probably got some of that too. I hope that you've got some tulips in the refrigerator. I'm planning to do that myself today. Get those ready for planting in a few weeks. And put this on your calendar if you're not already planning to be there. September the 20th, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. It's going to be a great event, the Magnolia Garden Festival Renaissance at Colony Park in Ridgeland. I will be there. I will have coffee to sell, coffee to pick up, so order yours. And we're going to have us a good time. It's going to be a lot of fun over there. Yes, our Biloxi correspondent has always got something to say. That's very, very true. That's very, very true. We do need all the good luck we can get, by the way, so we appreciate that very, very much. What is the secret to growing carrots? Thinning them is probably, after choice of variety, which is going to be a half-long or a Danvers half-long or a Chantenay or something that's not intended to be, you know, as long as your arm, some short carrot, and obviously well-drained soil. But the main thing people don't do is they don't thin them. Each carrot needs 2 inches before it hits the space of the next carrot next to it. And when we seed them, we usually don't do that. We usually don't do that. Let's see. Oh, yes, that's a fine time, Andrea. Look forward to seeing you next Saturday, too. After the hyacinths bloomed, she pulled the bulbs out and kept them. Is now a good time to plant them again? Yes, and if your soil doesn't drain well, it's a really good idea to dig them up the same way you would dig up caladiums or anything else that you wanted to protect. So that's a really, really good idea. I love y'all's pumpkin babies. These are so cute. Thank you. That's so much fun. I can't wait till we get a little closer to the time to see those jack-o'-lanterns. I know y'all will be doing that. Even a small pumpkin can be a jack-o'-lantern. We are not judgmental about that here.
I think the small ones would be a little more spooky.
They're kind of cute, yeah. They're cute, but they will scare you a little better. Wow, I hate to have to leave you, but we got to go. Thank you so much for your attention today. Thanks to my team here and to my team there at the studio. Appreciate you, Lance. We will be back next week.
The Garden Mama Show is a production of SuperTalk Mississippi Media. Download past episodes at supertalk.fm and contact Garden Mama anytime at mamaonair@yahoo.com. Thanks for choosing The Garden Mama Show.
Hello, I'm Sean Tindall, Commissioner of the Mississippi Department of Public Safety. Since 2021, Mississippi has seen a 25% reduction in fatalities involving crashes with commercial motor vehicles. Many of those crashes could have been avoided. DPS, through its MHP's Motor Carrier Unit and the Commercial Transportation Enforcement Division, is partnering with Big Rig Truckers to conduct safety checks across our state for the Trooper and Trucker Safety Initiative. The Department of Public Safety and the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration are working together to keep our highways safe for everyone. Thank you, and drive safely.
Hey there, homeowners! Sammy the Shovel here with an important message from Mississippi 811. Internet fiber expansions are being added, making it more important than ever to know exactly where your utilities lie when digging on your property. Whether it's simple landscaping or a large project, you need to call 811 at least 3 working days before you dig. Even with laws in place, safety is in your hands.
Start the right your thing. Day right.
And call 811
Mornings with
every
Richard
day,
Cross
every time.
On Super Talk Mississippi.
It all comes down to
a Super Talk Mississippi media production.